Hello. In this audio snippet, we had promised, and we're hoping to talk about the second person that we wanted to contrast against Thaddeus Stevens in previous audio snippets. We may or may not get to him. In a sense, there is a connection between him and what we want to share on today, but we may or may not get to him because of the relevance, I would say, of what we feel compelled to share today. Basically, the news would be that America has officially died. The date of death was a 3-day period, but it's in a larger sense a wider period. The basic core death, shall we say, has just finished happening. And it happened between September the 6th and September the 8th of this year, 2023. Now, the reason why these are the dates for the death of this country, and how I became aware of these dates, but would be a little bit complicated to share. But without going into too many details, it's basically based on a calculation. Now, what happened was that one day I was thinking about what had happened to Latin America and after having become painfully aware that we were on the verge here in America of going down the same route of dying to our calling, I began to wonder if there was some sort of parallel or similarity between the time periods, between certain time periods related to Latin America and America. So one day I took out the spreadsheet and started typing in like a date that I remember in my personal life that was very relevant and that I know has in a sense kind of like a metaphysical connection to the chance that Latin America was given to fulfill its calling. So I put down that date, and then I put down the date of when Latin America I knew had died. And I subtracted one date from the other in this Excel spreadsheet, and a number came up. And I saw that number as an interesting. And then I said, well, I felt like there was a certain, and this, by the way, this number of this time period covers years and years and years. It's not just like a period of 5 months or something like that. It's a period of over 17 years, I would dare say. So I said, well, is there an equivalent? And I felt like within my inner being, as if like a voice has said to me, yes, it will be the same with America. Exactly the same, the exact same number of days. So I said, well, okay, what is the starting point? So I started to look for a kind of an equivalent starting date, just as I had, just a date had come to me very clearly about the starting date for the Latin America period that I was measuring. I started looking for the equivalent. And the thing is that I had certain ambiguity as to when to start counting when it came to America. And there was a 3-day period that just, it's like there was one date, and it seemed like, okay, this is the date. But then I wasn't sure, and there was another starting date that happened, shall we say, 2 days later. So I had these two potential starting periods, and I just could not distinguish between the two. So I took the first starting date and added the period, the number of days that had come out from Latin America, to see when the kind of final trial period or testing period would end. And the first date that came out was the 6th of September of 2023. And when I took the second date and added that number of days, the same number of days, the final date was the 8th of September of 2023. And I kept debating which of the two dates is it. And it's as if internally, it's as if I was told it's both, because it is a death that will cover the 3 days. You know, because September the 6th through the September the 8th is a 3-day period. It's the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th. Even though 8 minus 6 equals 2, it's actually a 3-day period because you have to count the 6th day, the first date, as the first day. So I said, okay, is this it? And what amazed me with September the 8th was that date was very fresh in my head, because that was the date when Queen Elizabeth II died. And I knew when she died that her date of death was very, 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 very relevant. Even though she was a very irrelevant monarch, in the sense of, you know, basically accomplishing nothing other than just being a smiling face for, 70 plus years. I forget how long she stuck around. Despite the irrelevance of her monarchy, her monarchy was relevant because of its irrelevance. In a very ironic sense, because she was the final nail in the coffin of the British monarchical system. And as we have shared before, when she passed away, the monarchical system of Britain died. There is no more king, no more queen of England or of Great Britain. It's over. And anyone who calls him or herself a king or queen is just fooling themselves. There is no king or queen of England or Britain anymore. So her passing was very, very relevant. And we have shared before that it's as if she was given an opportunity to re-examine the role of the monarchy within British society when Princess Diana was inserted into the royal family. And unfortunately for her and for the entire royal family, they missed the opportunity that was given to them. They, instead of learning from Princess Di and kind of listening to the truth as they observed her, they shunned her and rejected her because she was different and she was trying to destroy the status quo that they had going. It's like, we have a good thing going here, please don't mess it up. We want to be this happy, smiling face family that symbolizes unity for the country, and that's all we want to be. We don't want to be anything else. And Princess Di kept in her heart saying, no, we can't be anything but the symbolica family. We have to be relevant in some way. And then we all know the betrayal of this Prince Chuck and all the things that happened. Queen Elizabeth II had the opportunity to learn and change, but she refused it. And it's interesting that all of this happened, that Princess Di and all of that happened whilst Margaret Thatcher, the greatest prime minister in the UK since Churchill, was in power. So it's as if Britain was at the height of this great opportunity to have a great change, especially in the monarchy. But Betty II just did not care. And so eventually, you know, Princess Di was separated from the royal family, and we all know the story. Eventually, she ended up dying that tragic death in Paris on August 31st, 1997, if I remember correctly. And as I've shared before, I remember that day when I found out that she had passed away. I had never been a fan of the royal family to begin with, but I do remember, and I was not like a groupie or any sort of thing when it came to Princess Di the way other people were. I had other things to worry about at the time, but I do remember that when I heard of her death, it really hit me hard. It's like, oh, I knew it was relevant, and I was not aware of many things at the time. I was kind of young in a sense, too young to know certain things, I guess, or had not had an opportunity to come upon certain understandings of things. But at the time, it's like I knew deep within me that her death was very relevant. Now, the thing is that as I was, so I knew that September the 8th was significant. It's as if when Betty II died in England, it was like this alarm, like this warning that was this siren that came that went off in England, and it was blaring across the ocean, Atlantic Ocean, to America to say, hey, you're about to die too, you're about to die as well. And and it's as if we had 1 year to fix things. Like, this is it. You have one more year to go. And also, I think I shared this before, that when I heard of Betty II's passing, I knew immediately, deep within me, this is very relevant. I just couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew it was very, very relevant. So when I did this calculation, and then September the 8th, 2023 came out, and as I said, it's not just a calculation of several weeks, it's a calculation of 17 plus years. And let me see if I can remember the exact number of days. I'll just repeat the calculation very quickly in my head if I remember. If I remember it correctly, because I was forced to remember a date in my life that happened a long time ago, which is what makes the calculation a little bit difficult to reconstruct. But let me see if I can do it right now, live. Okay, yeah, I believe this is the number of days. I should have done this earlier, but it was a period, if I'm doing the calculation correctly, of around 6,382 days. The reason why this is, I'm pointing this out just to emphasize that this is not just just adding a couple of days just to make things fit or anything like that. It's a very long period. So the fact that the final date, when I applied the same number of days to America that we had, the fact that the final date was September the 8th was just too coincidental. So the thing is that I knew that that America was going to have a death on September the 8th. But what about September the 6th? And I kept thinking, well, what is relevant about that date? I remember one morning, I think it was in the morning, I'm not sure what time of day it was, but there was one day when I was thinking about this and wondering, why September the 6th? Why September the 6th? And I had the television on, and an advert came on for something called BritBox. And it's some sort of service that is provided, some sort of streaming service, kind of equivalent to Netflix, I imagine. Since I don't have cable or any streaming services, I'm not too well versed in those things. But the advert was for BritBox, this sort of channel or streaming service that offers British shows. So they were flashing all these images from all these British detective shows and dramas and all that, and if I had the money and not the money, but if I had the interest in kind of getting back into having like a streaming service like most people do and all that, I would be very interested in having that BritBox thing. But the reason why I'm mentioning this is that as I was thinking, why September the 6th? Then suddenly, in the midst of these clips, mini clips that they were showing of different British shows, then a voice of a black man came on, a black man with a British accent. And he was saying, I think he was like an investigator in this show, like this crime show, and he was saying in the background, September the 6th, and that was the date of Princess Di's funeral, and it, like, my hair stood on end when I heard that. September the 6th was the date of Princess Di's funeral, and he said it because for some reason I have no clue about that was very relevant in the story that was being told on that television show or that episode, and I realized, oh, that's why September the 6th is there. So in this period of 6,382 days, or if I recalculated the number correctly just now, that there was, when I took one starting date, it ended on September the 6th. When I took the other starting date, it came out September, the final date of the 6,000 plus day period was September the 8th. And the first date is an anniversary of Princess Di's funeral, and the other date was the first anniversary of Elizabeth II's death. So it just made perfect sense, and as we just shared a moment ago, Princess Di was the last chance that the monarchy was given to fix itself, like the last big chance that it was given. And by the same token, we were given this 6,000 plus day period as the last chance for the country, a last great rush and opportunity for the country to be restored. And just like Latin America missed that their opportunity in that 6,382 day period. We missed it. We missed our opportunity, and that's why we are now dead, just like Latin America. Now, the thing is that there was always another date that kept coming up that was not September the 6th or September the 8th. And and I will share this very quickly. I was, I forget when it happened. It might have been, it was months ago, many months ago. And I think it was this year, some point this year, but I can't say that for sure. I think it was at some point this year. Might have been April. I remember it was sort of a chilly day, but not too chilly. So it might have been April. I went out to my lunch for my lunch break, as I always do, and I go out to the pier here in Hoboken, New Jersey, and I always go to the pier that is not too far from where I live, and I buy something to drink or whatever, and I go to the pier and sit there. The pier is right, it's right on the, on the Hudson River, and I can see Manhattan on the other side. So I can see the skyline of all the buildings. I can see the Empire State and the West Side, you know, tall buildings, the soulless buildings, as we tried to describe in a previous audio snippet. I think I can even see the Chrysler Building, and so forth. So I can see the whole thing. So I was sitting there and facing the New York skyline, and I was very meditative that day. I was just sitting there, and I just felt this emptiness, and I said I need to know. I need to know something. I just had to. It's like I said. It's like I was speaking to the truth and saying, I need to know something. I just don't know what it is, but I need to know something because I have no clarity on things. And as I was just staring blind, with this blank stare towards New York and thinking, I need to know something, like waiting to hear something. It's almost as if I could hear a voice inside of me saying, September the 18th, 1928. And it's as if I heard the voice say that was the day that America was given one last chance. And I couldn't quite understand what that meant. It's as if, but there was also something in the message to indicate that we blew it. Like, that date was very important, and we blew it. And I was kind of like stunned when I heard that, September the 8th, 1928. Like, I didn't know, it's like, what that meant exactly, but it was like a combination of the last chance. Like, we did something that day that kind of that where we blew it, and we then went on this kind of like death path that we've been on, like this final death path, because this death has had many stages. It's not just a simple, you know, boom, you're dead and that's it. It's like layers upon layers of death. Like it's like all these milestones that we have reached, or these forks in the road that we have reached along the way, and we just have kept going straight, like the pigs that we were talking about in the previous recording, just you know, going down the same path, and we're given this fork in the road to kind of go this way, you know, go towards the truth, and we just keep missing our exits. You know, it's like someone on a motorway or highway, and you know, they have to go to a certain place, but they want to stay on the highway, but you know, the highway is not the destination. You know, the highway was just a way to get to, just part of the journey to the final destination. We have this exit, and we miss the exit, and we just keep going, and then there's another exit, and no, we just keep going. And we've had these exits, come upon us at different points, and we just don't take the exit. September the 8th, 1928 seemed to be that night. And for a few days or weeks after that, I was thinking about September the 8th, 1928. And I, and in fact, we were planning to write an article on the website where these recordings are posted related to that date, based on what, you know, we would, could understand from it. And it never came to pass. I did meditate a lot about a lot of things, and without going into too many details, I found certain things, something that had to do with this like helicopter type machine that was invented by a Spaniard, and that's very intriguing to me to this day. There's something there that I still don't get. But to cut it short, just the thing that that I got that impacted me the most was that date, as I was looking into it, brought me to Al Jolson. And if I remember his name correctly, and I had heard that name Jolson before, and I, for some reason, as a kid, I must have at some point heard of a black R&B singer or someone like that named Jolson. So every time I would see that name, that surname, I would associate it with this black R&B singer, if he actually exists. But I just remember as a kid, for some reason, that I had heard of someone supposedly named Jolson, who was a black R&B singer. But turns out that this Al Jolson that I stumbled upon when looking at this, studying the date September the 18th, 1928. Oh, and by the way, the other thing that I saw that was deeply connected to that date was the Chrysler Building here in New York. And the contrast between the Chrysler Building and the Empire State. So a lot of things started coming out, but the thing is that the other thing that started coming out was Al Jolson. And Al Jolson turns out was a white, not a black man. He was a white man, and he was a Broadway kind of actor, actor and a singer. And apparently he had a booming, beautiful voice, at least from what I understand and remember right now. And he was the main character in the movie, or the film, The Jazz Singer. And I kind of heard of that film before, but I, you know, since I'm not too well versed in those things, I really didn't know, but I had heard of that. Had heard that title before, and turns out this film, The Jazz Singer, was basically, in a sense, the first talkie, because in the old days you had silent movies, silent films with no audio, and technically, if I remember correctly, this Jazz Singer was not the first talkie. And that's how they called it, the talkie, as opposed to a silent film. It was not the first talkie officially, but it was the first one that was like commercially successful, and it basically revolutionized the film industry. It's as if after The Jazz Singer, the film industry could no longer go back to just silent films. It's like they crossed the Rubicon. They crossed a certain threshold, and then after the success of The Jazz Singer, it became clear that we had to move into talkies, at least in the film industry. And so it was like a very relevant, like transitional film. And this Al Jolson was this character with his life, and he became the success and all of this. And I don't remember too many details, but there was a lot of relevance in that whole thing. It's as if I was as I was looking into September the 18th, 1928, I was brought into this period where there was this transition from one stage of being to another. And this very relevant man, Al Jolson, who, as it turns out, was a very who he was a Republican, politically speaking. He campaigned a lot for Republican candidates, and he was very committed to equality for black people. So as I looked into his life, it was like he was, in a certain way, a revival of the radical Republicans. It's like he was a Republican, and he kind of remembered why the Republican Party was established to begin with. And a very, very special person as I looked into his life. And Jolson, the name Jolson makes me think of Joel, you know, the name Joel, Joel, even though his the name is spelled Jolson. But every time I see Jolson, I see son of Joel, of Joel. And I think there's a relevance there, but that goes beyond the immediate scope of this recording. The thing is that I knew that for some reason he was very relevant, and it's like he was an opportunity that was given to the Republican Party, to America, to become aware of, okay, he was a transitional figure, very relevant in the film industry because he was part of this film that revolutionized the film industry, transitioned from silent films to talking films, and he represented everything that the radical Republicans were about. Oh, and by the way, he later became an object of criticism, especially by the white fascist liberal rubbish that you know that doesn't understand things, doesn't understand life, doesn't understand basic concepts. And he was became vilified because he used to do a lot of blackface things. So he would, you know, because in the old days, they would sometimes, if they didn't have a black actor, a white man would just paint himself black, and that's how they would do it. So he did some blackface characters, but it was never as a way of, it was never a racist thing. He was doing it, you know, for different reasons, because he wanted to. He would portray a black person, maybe when doing a song or whatever. But he was a man who, in his life, very clearly was constantly fighting for black people to be given an opportunity to work in on Broadway and in films, and you know, to have liberty and their rights respected in American society. So he was anything but a racist. And anyone who, if you ever hear someone saying, "Oh, he was a racist because he did blackface things," first of all, no historical context, that this person doesn't understand that this blackfacing is not necessarily something racist. This person doesn't understand the life of Al Jolson. If you hear someone vilifying him for that, you're just listening to a moron. Just turn around and walk away very slowly because you're in the presence of a crazy person. So the thing is that Al Jolson was very connected to September the 18th, and it's as if he represented something new, a transformation that we needed to embark on. And we missed it. And I think that was the core message of why, when I heard that strong, just voice saying September the 18th, 1928, a date that represented a missed opportunity. It's as if we missed the exit again, and that's when we started going down a very serious path of decline. And it's not a coincidence that A little over a year after that date, in October of 1929, we had the stock market crash, which led to the Great Depression, which led to the rise of Polio Boy, which led to the rise of the so-called New Deal, and which led to the rise of this massive, ever more intrusive and oppressive government system, and the rise of the relevance of socialism and all these Marxist mindsets and liberalism and everything that began to just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. So I know that that's not a coincidence. Like September the 18th was very relevant. We were supposed to wake up. We didn't wake up. And then we went down this path, and this nonsense has just grown and grown and grown. And in the meantime, the conservatives just keep going down the same highway, the same founding fathers highway. And now we have come to the end of the road. As Boys to Men would say in one of their songs, this is the end of the road. And America is now dead. The car that the conservatives were riding on in this highway has crashed, and the country's dead. So the thing is that I kept thinking of September the 18th. As well, but that was not the number that came up in, you know, what we in those calculations that I was doing. But the weird thing is, or I don't know if the word is weird, but the interesting thing I would say was that I received two emails from two different people that don't know each other. They don't know about each other's existence. And these two people who are completely separate, in a sense, geographically and in every way. They both independently emailed me and let me know that they believe the date of the death was September the 18th. And I had never shared about September the 18th, 1928, with anyone, as far as I recall. I don't think I have, but it's always been like a thought inside of me. And this is the first time, as far as I know, that I'm saying it out loud to anyone. So I found it interesting, September the 18th. Now, September the 18th is also very relevant because I remember a long time ago, back in 2002, when I was just pressing and interceding that we had to have Saddam Hussein taken out in Iraq. We have to have him taken out. We have to have him taken out. And I knew, don't tell me how I knew, I just knew it, that we had to do an invasion of Iraq to take out Saddam Hussein between September the 18th of 2002 and September 24th. That week of September the 18th through the 24th of 2002 was when that was the window of opportunity to invade Iraq and to take out Saddam Hussein. And don't tell me how I know this, but I just know in my inner being that that the Bush administration had set up those dates for the invasion. I don't know how I know, I just know. And maybe someday someone who was in the Bush 43 administration will confirm this, that they had decided to do the invasion between September the 18th and September the 24th of 2002. But what happened was that a few days before that, the problem was Bush had the son of a bitch Tony Blair's mouth in one. In one ear, and in the other ear, he had the voices of idiots like Colin Powell, just giving him advice. Just the way that Trump was given Ivanka and Jared in both ears, giving him all this stupid advice that led to his downfall. Well, Bush had the same thing with Tony Blair and Colin Powell and other morons that he had around him, and they kept convincing him, you need to have a coalition just like your daddy did in the first Gulf War, And he, I remember that on September the 15th, I think it was, he went to the, he came to New York and went to the UN to give a speech. And he was trying to convince the world that, you know, we need to coalesce just like we did in the 1990, 91, to attack Saddam Hussein and take him out because he's a danger to his own people, a menace to his own people and to the world. But nothing came of it because the UN just was not interested because Iraq, the taking out of Saddam Hussein represented more than the taking out of a dictator. It just represented a whole bunch of stuff. And as if in their inner beings, this crowd of worthless UN bastards just knew it and didn't want to go there. And so they opposed it. And because of that, when Bush saw that there was no response to his plea for a coalition, then he called off the invasion. And because he called off the invasion, he gave Saddam Hussein 6 months to dismantle the weapons of mass destruction and kind of transport them to Syria, to his buddy, the bastard Assad. And that's where they went and stayed, all dismantled, because, you know, Hussein knew that the invasion was coming and he wanted to remove any evidence so that he could say, hey, you know, there's no reason to invade us. There's nothing here. You know, inspectors, you can come and check. There's nothing. But the thing is that had we invaded in that time period, we would have found the weapons of mass destruction that Bush kept talking about because they were there. If you have doubts about it, go ask the Kurds who got genocided by Saddam Hussein when he killed, I could be exaggerating, but I remember a number like 185,000 Kurds murdered, maybe not at once, but over a period of time with chemical weapons. So he had the weapons to kill thousands of people. He just smuggled them away. And then once they were in Syria, they were used in part by Assad, because Assad was known to have used chemical weapons at certain points during the Syrian conflict. So the thing is that there was another, again, a door of opportunity, September the 18th through September the 24th, where we had the opportunity to effect a great change. And yes, thankfully, Bush did eventually to invade, and I think it was March 19th, if I remember correctly, of 2023, which means, you know, 6 months, almost exactly to the day from September the 18th that we invaded Iraq, and boom, in 21 days, I think it was, we took the son of a bitch out, because I kept interceding, he needs to be hanged, he needs to be hanged. I kept seeing him being hanged in the center of Baghdad in this big plaza. I just kept seeing him being hanged, and I rejoiced when I saw that when Baghdad fell, and they had this, and the Iraqi people rejoiced. I know the white liberal trash don't give a damn about the Iraqi people. They claim to care about the minorities and all that rubbish, but they really don't give a damn about the Iraqi people. They don't care about the fact that they were rejoicing when Hussein was taken out, and the statue of Hussein, they came and toppled it with a crane, and I forget what it was, and they had this chain on the head of Hussein. This statue was in the middle of this big square or plaza, and as I saw it, as they were toppling it, it looked like Hussein's head was hanging. If you catch my drift, from this crane that was pulling the statue down from the head, with a chain around the neck of the head of the statue. And I saw it's like the vision that I had of Saddam Hussein being hanged in the middle of the public square in Baghdad. It just came to pass right there. And then we've described I think in a previous audio recording, how what happened afterwards was that Bush kept listening to Tony Blair and Colin Powell. You know, he kept going. They kept going, cool it down. Don't be too extremist here. Be cautious and don't look like you're a thug. And because of that, he literally cooled it down. And that's when the enemy from both sides, Iran and Syria and Jordan, Syria and Jordan on the west side, western border of Iraq, and Iran on the eastern border, they said it's now or never. We have to destabilize Iraq, because if we let Iraq develop a democracy with the help of the Americans, we're going to be in trouble, because then there's going to be a beachhead of democracy in the Arab world, and we don't want that. And we don't want the Americans to look good, because if the Iraqi people start experiencing freedom and prosperity, other Arab nations are going, our Arab people in other countries are going to want that, and we don't want that. We want Meshuggah to be our ideology and the one we follow, so we can't have that. So that's when they started flooding in terrorists. All the damage and havoc wreaked in Iraq was from foreign terrorists. That's why that it was not, and we talked about this on the website where we record, we post these recordings, that there was, I knew in my being that everything that was happening in Iraq was not the Iraqi people rebelling against the Americans who were there to help liberate them, but it was all the terrorists who started flooding in from outside. And that's why al-Zarqawi, I forget the name of this, the bastard, who became like the great worldwide terrorist leader. He was doing all these attacks in Iraq, and he was, if I remember correctly, from Jordan. He was a Jordanian. So I knew it was not, that it was all this foreign infiltration, and none of that would have happened if Bush 43 had not been afraid of being called a thug, and he had said, okay, now that Saddam Hussein has been toppled, we're going to make Assad very uncomfortable. He was supposed to then move all the troops or a significant number of troops to the border with Syria, as if to say, Assad, you don't get out of there. We're going to invade Syria, and you're going down too. And Assad, whilst all of this was happening, he was pooping in his trousers, in his pants. He was pooping. He was just scared to death of what the Americans were going to do to him. But because Bush 43 did not follow up, then he kind of said, oh, okay, I'm okay now. I'm not going to be toppled. Because had he felt the threat of the Americans coming, he would have fled, because he's a coward at the end of the day. So he would have fled, and then Syria would have had the opportunity to start a democracy. So there might not have been a need to physically invade Syria. We just needed to do the threat. And then eventually maybe invade Syria if necessary to take out another dictator. And had that happened, we would have never had the Syrian refugee crisis that became the excuse for all the Muslim foreign refugees that started invading Europe. See, all of this is just one domino effect, one thing after another. A lot of things would have been prevented if we had just done things right. But Bush didn't do things right, so he did. See, the thing is, if the troops had been on the Syrian border, then all that influx of terrorists from the border would not have happened, because the troops would have been there just protecting, sealing the border. Because they would have been there with the threat of invasion, and the terrorists would not have snuck in. And by the same token, Bush was supposed to take another portion of the troops and put them in the eastern border with Iran, as if to say, hey, you want to mess with Iraq and destabilize Iraq, you're gonna have war with the most powerful country on the face of the earth, and you're going down, boy. Because that's the only language these thugs understand. You have to talk like a thug to them, or be more thuggish than they are. You can't say, oh, can't we all get along? Let's sit down for a cup of tea and some crumpets and talk it out. You can't do that. You can't, you know, you can't start drinking your tea with a little pinky finger sticking out and think that that's going to, you know, make for civilized conversation with these animals. And I don't, I'm not saying that we should have invaded Iran, but believe you me, if we had had the troops on the border with Iran as well, the Iranian people would have said, hey, the Americans are here. We're going to, we are going to be free. And they would have started a people's revolution. And with the American troops right next door, the Iranian people would have been emboldened. And then the Iranian regime would have toppled from within. See, all these things would have happened if we had done things right. Then the Iranian regime would have toppled, and the Iranian people who have fought for democracy and freedom, you know, all this time, and been suppressed over and over again because they have no one to support them, would have been free. So we would have had democracy in Iran, democracy in Iraq, democracy in Syria, and would have had this just kind of revolution of democracy. The Arab Spring would have happened in its full, in its real full form. And we would have been able to get out of Iraq very quickly, because once things had stabilized in the region, there was no reason for us to stick around. All the troops that died, all the people who lost their limbs, lost their lives, who are suffering to this day, the people who did survive and came back and came back injured and with all these life altering injuries, none of that would have happened if we had done things right. We would not have had to stay there for years and years and years the way we did, if we had just done things right the way it was supposed to be done. And I'm saying all of this because we had the door of opportunity from September the 18th through September the 24th of 2002, and we didn't do it because we hesitated again. So again, there's that relevance of September the 18th. As a date of decision, like a time of deciding what to do and what not to do. So it's also relevant from all of that, and you know, September the 18th, 1928, September the 18th, 2002, the two emails from two different persons saying the same date that came to their hearts and minds, it's all not a coincidence. So does that mean September the 18th is the date of America's death, or instead of September the 6th through the 8th? Well, the answer is yes and no. And I it's like I knew September the 18th was also a date of death, but how does it fit in? And then I realized that if you count from September the 6th through September the 18th, you have 13 days. And you go, well, 18 minus 6 is 12. But remember, when you're every time you're trying to count or calculate the number of days between two dates, you always have to add one. Like if you say, I'm going to be in Miami from the 3rd to the 5th of the month. 3rd to the 5th, you'd say, oh, that's 2 days. No, it's actually three. The 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th. Because the first date counts as the first day. It's just a mathematical rule. You know, when you're trying to calculate the number of days between two dates, you subtract the dates, one from the other, and then add one. So September the 6th through the 18th is actually a 13-day period. You know, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th. I have to use three toes now. The 16th, the 17th, the 18th. Yes, it's 13 days. So and what is the relevance of 13? And I became aware of this. 13, oh, that's interesting. Isn't that the number of colonies that we started off with in 1776? So the death of America it's as if we're a body. Like, think of America as a body, a physical body. The from September the 6th to the 8th, what happened is the brain died. We are now brain dead. America, the body of America, it's calling, it's brain dead. So when we entered September the 6th, it became inevitable Okay, there is no turning back now. There's no like you still have a chance, even though you're not taking it. Nothing. The moment we hit September the 6th, the moment that date came upon the land, it was over. So now it's just the death. It's like an eclipse. The eclipse is happening. There's no stopping it. So the sun starts getting blocked out. So, the darkness begins to fill the land. So September the 6th through the 8th is the beginning of the full death of the entire body. And it's when the calling of America became brain dead. The 6th, the 7th, and the 8th. And then once the brain is dead, I'm not too well versed in biology and all those things, but I figure that once the brain dies, it's not like every part of your body is immediately dead. There is a process, because the brain controls a lot of actions, but even after the brain dies, the organs in the body stay alive, shall we say, for a while, and then eventually the death becomes complete throughout the body. And that's what's going to be happening from now on until the 18th. The entire body is going to die. The organs are going to fail one by one, and then the whole body will be dead, completely dead. But for all intents and purposes, once you're brain dead, it's over. And there is no reversal to this brain death. It's not like America's going to have a near-death experience and go to the light and then having Jesus tell them, oh, go back, it's not your time yet, or whatever. That's not going to happen here. It's over. So once you're brain dead, it's over. Because I've heard of people who've been dead for a while and they come back to life. In this case, the brain is dead. It's over, and then that death is just going to expand through the rest of the body until September the 18th, and it's done. Now, the fact that it's 13 days means that it's one day for each of the original 13 colonies, because we clung to the concept of the founding America as it was founded. That was the highway we were on, and we're going to stay on that highway or die. It's like we don't care if this means we will die. We will stay on this highway and put the pedal to the metal and continue down this highway until we get to wherever. And that's the amazing thing to me. The conservatives never had a destination, because all they want us to do is stay on the same in the same plane. So it's as if their whole journey was staying on the highway forever. But the truth was going to have none of that. So the thing is that it's one day for each of the colonies, because that's what we wanted to stay on. On the foundation of the 13 colonies, and that's the foundation upon which we died, and therefore it's one day for each of those colonies. And then I said to myself, well, what do the first 3 days represent? What colonies do they represent? And then it just came to me, like boom, boom, boom. The first September the 6th was the day. If we talk figuratively in terms of colonies, it's the day Pennsylvania died. September the 7th was the day Massachusetts died. And September the 8th was the date New York died. Those are the three heads that formed the brain of the 13 colonies. And they represent the judge personality, the visionary personality, and the conqueror personality. And as we've described before, those are the three, quote, male personalities. There are five basic human personalities. Three have a male connotation to them, and two have a female connotation to them. And the three colonies that represent our maleness as a nation were Pennsylvania. I'm speaking figuratively, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and New York. they were the brains of what became, you know, the American nation when it was put to get, came together with the 13 colonies. Pennsylvania represents the judge personality, and specifically, if we reduce it to cities within that, in each colony or state, Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania. Philadelphia represents the judge personality. The judge personality is the one that brings out wisdom and puts foundations, foundational principles and ideas. And where was the U.S. Constitution drafted? In Philadelphia. Where was the Declaration of Independence done? In Philadelphia. Philadelphia was the seat of government for a while. It's a very foundational place where laws and principles were established for the entire nation. So Philadelphia represents our judge personality. It died on September the 6th. Our ability our potential to fully grow in our judge personality as a nation died on September the 6th, represented by Philadelphia and Pennsylvania's death. Then September the 7th is Massachusetts' death. And specifically, if we think of one city in particular, it would be Boston, Boston in Massachusetts. And Boston represents the visionary personality dying in America. In the 13 colonies, one of the things that motivated our separation from Britain was the so-called Boston Massacre, where certain Bostonians died, and there's a lot of debate over what really happened that day, but that's not worth going into. The point is that Boston was the place that represented America acting as a visionary rebel, because visionaries are the type who get very rebellious against authority, who defy authority and have no fear of dying in the face of authority. They are willing to rebel and pay the price of death if necessary. That's how visionaries behave. And in a certain sense, that's what Massachusetts and Boston in particular represented in the 13 colonies, our willingness as a nation to fight for a vision and defy authority, defy established rules and principles that are unfair or unrighteous, and to die if necessary in defiance of that authority. That's why Boston is also the place where we had the Boston Tea Party. People rebelling and saying, singing that old song, "We're not going to take it anymore." That is what Boston and Massachusetts represented in the 13 colonies, the visionary personality. On September the 7th, a couple of days ago, that visionary personality, the destiny of the greatness that would be manifested in our visionary personality as a nation, died. And then on September the 8th, the conqueror personality of America and its calling died, and it's represented by the state of New York. New York is, as we all or at least in America, or maybe parts of America, we know, is the Empire State. That's how it's called, the Empire State. It's a place of conquest. It represents the conquering personality of America, and in particular New York City. It is a place of giants, and conquerors are giants, and it's physically manifested in Manhattan with all the tall skyscrapers and the tall buildings everywhere. New York has always represented our conquering personality, and that died on September the 8th, as well. So we became fully brain dead after September the 8th, when our Philadelphia died, our Boston died, and our New York City died. And I have no clue. Maybe someday I will understand exactly how it works, but I don't know what colony corresponds to each of the days that follow from this. This is being recorded on September the 9th, 2023. I have a colony that comes to my mind, but I don't dare to say it out loud because I really don't know for sure. But I'll say it. I think it's Maryland, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I could be wrong. It could be Maryland or Virginia, but it's one of the two, I would dare say, that's represented today. And then one more, every day is going to be a colony. And maybe one day I will know which colony went with which date. On September the 18th, the last of the 13 colonies is going to die, in the sense of what they represented. And then the whole body will be dead. Having shared this, I wanted to do something a little bit unusual, and I've been meaning to do this for quite a while, ever since I understood that this day was going to come. I feel like I'm in a funeral home, and I'm giving the eulogy, but this is really not a eulogy. I think there's a word for it when you when you're lamenting someone's death. I forget the word for it, but and this is not a eulogy, because eulogy comes from the EU, and eulogy means good in Greek, I think, and logi in eulogy comes from the Greek word logos, which means word. So basically, a eulogy is someone standing up and giving a good word about the guy who just died. I'm not here to give a eulogy, because I'm not here to give a good word about the guy in the casket. I'm here to kind of almost condemn him for being in the casket. This has this feel of it, like I'm in a funeral home and we're talking about the guy who's dead, but I'm not here to praise him for how great he was. I'm here to condemn him for having allowed himself to die like that. I want to share a song with you. My intention is to pull up the song, play it for a short while, and then read the rest of the lyrics. I don't want to play too much of it because of copyright issues. I think that you can only play it for 30 seconds. I don't want to get into any copyright problems, and my intention is not to rip off, the song or anything like that. So I'm going to play a portion of it and try to stay within the 30-second range. I just want you to have a feel for the song. And you can look it up and maybe purchase it if you like, or listen to it. The song is by a young lady. Well, I'm not sure if she's young anymore or that young. I think she's still young, I would dare say. Her name is Katie Shaw. It's spelled C-A-T-E-Y, and the surname is Shaw, S-H-A-W. And I don't know how I came across this song, but I have a list of songs of my favorite songs of all time. It's like 1,300 songs, and every now and then I would add a song that I heard somewhere and I'd put it in the list somewhere. And I remember when I was, this list has been kind of growing ever since I was a kid. I lost it at one point and had to kind of reconstruct it, but I remember when I was younger, I would spend Saturday afternoons just trying to order the songs, in this huge list of songs, trying to put, which one was number 305 and which one was number 306 and so forth. So I spent a lot of time doing that because I had nothing else to do. But somehow this song was added to the list. I have no idea how. Don't ask me how. I just know. And every now and then I go to the list to see if I can purchase one of the songs on the list. And that's how I built my tiny little library of songs. Right now I have like 800 songs that I've purchased over the years from all these, from this list. And this is one of the songs. And this song, I think, came out in somewhere in the 2000s. I don't remember the exact time, but it was around a time period when I had basically had begun to not listen to radio popular music anymore. But somehow I ran into this song, and it came up. And so I looked up a little bit about her, didn't know her, and she, this Katie Shaw, is this singer from Brooklyn. And she had this kind of like Cinderella type start, because she was playing on subways, in subway stations and in trains and stuff like that. I'm not sure if she would play in the train, but she was in New York subway stations. She's from Brooklyn, and that's how she got her start. And then she got a couple of hit songs, in the charts. And sadly, I don't think she had too many other hit songs after that. Maybe she's still going strong. I have no idea, because I don't know the music scene anymore, but or anything about the music scene. But she had this kind of Cinderella start, and the fact that she was from Brooklyn is very relevant to me, because I always remember. That I would sometimes see the Brooklyn Bridge. I'd go past it, and I look at the Brooklyn Bridge and kind of longingly look at the other side of the Brooklyn Bridge from Manhattan, saying, "One day, when I'm able to get to Brooklyn, that's when I know that the change to America has come." It's like Brooklyn represented that crossing of the Brooklyn Bridge and going into Brooklyn. Represented the day that America would be free to fulfill its calling. And I've been to Brooklyn only once. It's so strange, having been in the New York area for so many times. One day I decided I'll go to Brooklyn. And it was one of the scariest experiences of my life. I had this thing this Sunday. I have to go to this one place, and it was this place in a black neighborhood, and I had never been there, I'm not going to go into the details of why I went to that place, and what I went to do there. But I felt that it was important that I go there, and that was going to be an opportunity for Brooklyn to respond to me, but Brooklyn didn't respond. But I remember the whole time I just felt fear. I don't know why. But the thing is that, and that's the only time I've been in Brooklyn, and I was hoping that if America ever changed, I would somehow get the opportunity to go back there and feel free to go there without fear or anything of the sort. It never happened. I don't think I'll ever. Brooklyn will never have the privilege of having me set foot in Brooklyn ever again, I don't think. But this lady represents that, that revival, that transformation of America. She was from Brooklyn. And she wrote, I think, and sang this song that was a hit in 2014, 2000 something. It was in the 2000s, so it's not this is not an old song by any stretch of by any stretch. So let me just play roughly 30 seconds of it. I hope you are able to hear it as I play it here, and then I'm going to read the rest of the lyrics to you. But I just want you to have a feeling for the mood of the song, the spirit or the feeling behind the song. So here it goes. It's called Show Up by Katie Shaw.
Sonoma, and I take a sip of wine. Are you gonna read the
Okay. I hope you heard that. I played 29 seconds of it just on the edge to avoid any copyright issues. And I'm going to now read the rest of the lyrics, if I can find them here. Okay. So I hope you heard the beginning. She sings, "Are you gonna run the marathon and not cross the finish line? Drive out to Sonoma and not take a sip of wine? Are you gonna read the mystery novel and not find out how it ends? Prepare for the party and not even attend." And this is the part that gets me every time I hear it. She then sings, "All the work has been done. Only question is, are you gonna come? Are you gonna show up for this love? Or are you gonna let it go? Tell me, are you gonna show up for this love? Or are you gonna let it go? Tell me, are you going to show?" And then she sings, "Are you going to graduate from law school and never take the bar? Fix up an old Mustang and never drive the car? Are you going to plant yourself a garden and never pick what you've grown? You're going to waste all of that beauty just to spend your nights alone?" And then she says again, "All the work has been done. Only question is, are you going to come? Are you going to show up for this love? Are you going to let it go? Tell me, are you going to show? Are you going to show up for this love? Or are you going to let it go? Tell me, are you going to show?" And then she says, "It's easier to sit there in your bed than to take a chance and climb up for the string. You learn to think that there is no other way. But I'll be broken if you choose to stay this way. All the work has been done. Only question is, are you going to come? Are you going to show up for this love? Are you going to let it go? Tell me, are you going to show? Are you going to show up for this love? Or are you going to let it go? Tell me, are you going to show?" And it's as if this song is the truth singing to America. Saying, everything is ready. You've come this far. You just have to take this one last step, and you're going to enter into the fullness of your destiny. And but you have to show up for this. This is the last thing you need to do. Are you going to show up? It's like somebody preparing this big party, this big celebration for someone, and waiting for the person, you know, the guest of honor to show up. This was all done for that person, and the person just was not interested. And what breaks my heart is that part when she says, "All the work has been done. Only question is, are you going to come?" And I think of the, you know, people who the truth seekers who've made so many sacrifices in their lives to make this party possible. It's as if a feast was prepared. All this food was put there. You cooked with love and so much sacrifice and so much attention, so much care. Just all prepared. This wonderful, wonderful food set on this table and waiting for the people to show up to enjoy that great meal and fulfill everything that was in store for them. And America said, "No, thank you. We're not interested. We're not going to show up." So that's what happened here with America as they passed away. The other song I want to share with you is another song that also kept coming into my head as America was on its way to dying. And let me, you might be aware of this song. This is an old, relatively old song. And again, I'm going to do the 30-second thing just going to let you hear the first 30 seconds of the song, or 29 seconds, and then I'm going to read the rest of the lyrics to you. You might know what song it is if you're well versed in this style of music. So let me see if I can play it, and I hope you can hear it.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and red. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chill.
Okay, I hope you heard that. The song is called Vincent, and it's by Don McLean. I used to think of the song as being called Starry Night, but it's actually Vincent. But the song starts, I'm going to read the lyrics here. Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chills, in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze, reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue. Colors changing hue, morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. For they could not love you, but still your love was true. And when no hope was left inside, on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. Starry, starry night, portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget. Like the strangers that you've met, the ragged man in ragged clothes, the silver thorn of bloody rose, like crushed and broken on the virgin snow. Now I think I know what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never will. So now this song is clearly about Vincent Van Gogh. Obviously in reference to Starry Night. And the reason why I'm sharing this is that it kind of represents the sentiment of the awareness of how the people who spoke the truth were not listened to, and how they had so much to say, but there was no one to listen. And this is more or less what happened to America. And the part that kind of gets me a little bit, or kind of shocks me or bothers me, shall we say, about the song is when it says, you took your life as lovers often do. And in a sense, you could say that that is what has happened here. That America didn't respond. And the problem was that those who were seeking the truth, who were trying to speak to her, who suffered for their sanity. It's like the truth seekers were the only ones who had the sanity. And because they were sane and America was going insane, ironically, that's what caused the suffering of the truth seekers, because they were suffering for their sanity. And we were trying to set other people free from their insanity, and But the thing is, as long as the truth seekers in America kept, you know, speaking to America and hoping for it to change, it's as if we were keeping America artificially alive. And the problem is, if we try to cling to America, try to keep her alive, when she really has no chance for staying alive, we end up basically kind of condemning ourselves to die with her. But to die in a bad death, not a good death. So that's why the only thing left as America remained in the same condition without ever listening or ever changing, the only thing to do was to cut ourselves off from America. And that's what's happening now. The truth seekers cut themselves off officially. On September the 6th, 2023, the cord was cut. The connection between the truth seekers in America and America was gone. And then America had nothing to keep it alive anymore. It's as if the plug was pulled, and therefore America died. It's as if we kind of took our lives away from America. And in that sense, when it says you took your life, as lovers often do. We didn't like commit suicide, but in a certain figurative sense, relative to America, it's as if we died. Like, okay, we're not going to keep you alive anymore. We're going to die. Die in the context of you. We're not alive in you anymore. And when the truth seekers did that, America was dead. It's as if we decreed the death in a certain way. Because we knew the deadline, we decreed it, and it's over. And it's a decision that has to be made, because if we just continue hoping and hoping and hoping, all we're doing is keeping a hopeless body alive, and we will end up dying with the body in an ignominious death. So that's the other song. And Vincent, the word Vincent means, it comes from Latin, I believe, and it means conqueror. So the people who came with a truth that would conquer, and that would achieve these great things and achieve these great conquests, they were not listened to. And that's why America is now dead. So the thing is that now that America is dead, I remember on the 5th of September, which was Tuesday. I had asked for that day off at work, and it was the day following what's called in America Labor Day, which fell on September the 4th in 2023. So I had September the 4th off for Labor Day, which is a bank holiday in America, and then I had asked from to have a day off at work the following day as well. So the September the 5th, which was a Tuesday, I was outside, and I was doing some things on my computer and sitting at the pier again here in Hoboken. And then I knew the night was coming, and it was around 7 p.m. And I felt, okay, September the 6th is coming, and I knew that at least it was not yet September the 6th here in America, but in the UK, it was, because of the 5-hour difference, it was going to be September the 6th in a short while. And as I was kind of sensing that September the 6th was coming, sitting there, I was listening to the music on my phone with my earbuds on, and And then as I knew that I had to get up and leave, and it was a sad moment because I felt like it's like the last few moments of me being outside with America still alive. And as I knew that I was about to get up and go and leave and come back to where I live, I heard this song. The song came up. It's like it was so fitting. The song that came up in this shuffled, you know, list. I wasn't deciding which song was coming up. It was just the list that the song that came up in the shuffled list. At that very moment, the song that came up was a song that I have on the phone, which is "The Star Spangled Banner" by Anita Bryant. And you may want to look her up if you wish. What happened is that I came across her, and I knew I had to buy her songs, or one of her songs. I just knew it. It's a very long story. I'm not going to get into that because it would be too long. But the thing is, I knew I had to buy it. But when I went to buy this one song, it turned out I could only buy the entire album. And I said, okay, I have no choice. I bought the entire album, and one of the songs, and I usually don't do that, by the way. I prefer to buy individual songs, and if I can't get the individual song, I just don't buy it. But in this case, I had to make an exception. I had to get the whole album, so I bought it. And one of the songs was "The Star Spangled Banner" by Anita Bryant. As I said, you may want to look her up. She's a very interesting person and special person. And she has a very beautiful voice. I don't know if she's still alive. I'm not quite sure. But so she sang "The Star Spangled Banner" and a beautiful rendition of it. And let me read part of "The Star Spangled Banner," at least as she sang it. The thing is, most of us know the first verse of "The Star Spangled Banner" because it's played at baseball games and football games and so forth here in America. So a lot of people, most people in America and around the world are familiar, but only with the first verse of "The Star Spangled Banner." But that song has actually four verses, but Anita Bryant sang the first verse and the last verse. So let me, I'm not going to read the first verse because everybody knows it, at least in America. And the last verse, I'm going to read it here. She sings, "Oh, thus be it ever, when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must, when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave." So there's a lot here. It makes me think when it says, praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. And obviously, she's referring to God. And it's this awareness, at least she had this awareness that, and if you hear the other songs, you go, yes, she sounds like a conservative patriot and all that, but her patriotism is different. It's the type of patriotism that I believe in, if you can call it patriotism. It's a patriotism of thankfulness. It's not a pride in something, but thankful that you are in the midst of something special, which is very different. Being thankful for being born in a country like this, or having the opportunity to live and work and grow in a country like this. That's the real patriotism. It's the awareness of of yes, we are, and I love this country, and I love what's so special about it because of what's good in it. It's not like, oh, because it's American, then it's good. No, it's good, therefore I'm happy about it. And it happens to be something good in America, if that makes any sense. But the false patriotism is the one where it says, well, okay, is it from America or not? Oh, if it's not from America, bad. If it's from, it's good old American stuff, good, then it's good. That's bad. When you judge something by whether it's good or bad, depending on whether or not it's American or, you know, traditional or American or whatever, that's when it's bad. So she has, but this awareness that, you know, we're connected to something, and the moment we disconnect ourselves from that something, the nation is no longer preserved. And that's what happened here. We got disconnected from the truth. And the moment we got disconnected from the truth, it's as if the plug was pulled on the machine that was keeping us alive, that was preserving us from dying, and the country's dead. And there's nothing that can be done to remedy that. And then she says, and this is the part of maybe my favorite line in the whole Star Spangled Banner, when it says, "Then conquer we must, when our cause it is just." And so it's interesting. We conquer we must when our cause is just. In other words, when the cause that we're to fight for is inherently just, good and just, then we must go in conquering mode, and go into Vincent mode and conquer. So it's not saying then conquer we must if we want to make America great again. You know, that it's not like conquer to make America great. It's conquer to fight for a cause that is just. When we went into Iraq and took out Saddam Hussein, that cause was just. Then conquer we must, and we did partially. But we didn't do it the way we should have. So, but I just wanted to point that out. And that was the song that came up as I was kind of like, it was like the sun was setting on America, literally. And I was about to get up and go. And then the Star Spangled Banner, almost as if like a final goodbye to the country. I don't know how to explain it. It just felt like a goodbye. And then the song that came afterwards, as I was almost going to get up to leave, then the song that came up on the phone was "What If" by Coldplay. And I guess I'm not going to play that song, but you may be aware of it. I'm going to find the song here and read the part of the lyrics. I went to this songmeanings.com website. They have the lyrics, and then they have people commenting on the meaning of the song. So I'm just going to read parts of it. It says, "What if there was no lie, nothing wrong, nothing right? What if there was no time and no reason or rhyme? What if you should decide that you don't want me there by your side, that you don't want me there in your life? What if I got it wrong and no poem or song could put right what I got wrong or make you feel I belong? What if you should decide that you don't want me there by your side, that you don't want me there in your life? Oh, that's right. Let's take a breath, jump over the side. Oh, that's right. How can you know if you don't even try? Oh, that's right." And then it says, "Every step that you take could be your biggest mistake. It could bend or it could break, but that's the risk that you take. What if you should decide that you don't want me there in your life, that you don't want me there by your side?" And then it repeats some things, and then the song ends. It's "What If" by Coldplay. And let me read one of the comments that someone left about this song. It says here, someone wrote in 2006, January 25th, someone wrote, "Come on, hasn't anyone been in a relationship where the other person wasn't willing to commit or try because he or she was afraid of being hurt? This song is not about the fans, nor about his daughter." It's referring to Chris Martin, the singer. He's not talking about the fans of Coldplay or about his daughter. I think her name is Apple. So it says, it's most likely Chris asking Gwyneth Paltrow, to take a chance, let him into her heart. Otherwise, how will they ever know they really tried? I know this for a fact because I've been there. Believe me, I still am. So it's basically, that's what the song is. So it's interesting that those were the two last songs that I heard at the pier before I stood up and walked away, walked out of America, in a sense, as the sun was setting. So first the Star Spangled Banner, and then What If? Like this big question, what if America had responded? And then also all the what ifs that America kept asking as the truth was being spoken to her. You know, what if this is a lie? What if all of this that I'm being told is just some heresy? Things being twisted and corrupted because they question everything I believe and everything I stand for, that I've stood for all my life. It's all heresy. It's all false teachings. All these things, and especially the conservative Christians kept saying that. What if this is a lie from the devil and I'm being deceived? And it wasn't a lie from the devil. It was the truth. And you just didn't want to listen. And you kept saying, "Well, it's a risk. I don't want to, you know, start following these strange ideas because I might end up losing everything. I don't want to take a risk. Everything here is safe. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why am I going to take a chance when when everything is okay? Just keep going the way things are. And we have a few bumps on the road, but everything's going to be all right. I just want to play it safe." And because America played it safe, it lost everything. And that's why that song came up as the song after the Star Spangled Banner. And then I got up and left. And I knew in my heart, America was dead. So I just wanted to share that. And as all of this has been happening, September the 6th through the 8th, some of you may be aware at the time of this recording that there's a hurricane called Lee that's been churning in the Atlantic Ocean all this time, and they've been talking about how it's like, at least at one point, it looked like one of the biggest storms in history, in recorded history. Looked like this monster in the Atlantic Ocean just churning and churning with 185 mile per hour winds and so forth. And no one knew where it was going. So on September the 8th, yesterday, which was a Friday, I went out on my lunch break to the pier once again. And the weird thing is all day the sun had been bright. You know, it was a nice, very pretty, nice day. And then it started getting darker and darker as the afternoon came in. And the sunny skies just got dark, and it just kept getting darker and darker. I went out to buy some food and went to the pier. And by the time we got to the pier, it was this dark gray over the whole place, these dark cloud formations. And the wind was blowing. And, you know, Lee is way, way out there in the Atlantic Ocean, way, way away. So I don't know exactly where this wind was coming from. But everybody here in the New York area has been, you know, worried or thinking about Lee and Hurricane Lee and all that. It's going to hit the Northeast coast and blah, 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 blah. So, but the thing is, I was sitting there at the pier, and the darkness coming, September the 8th, you know, the final day of the brain death of America, of America's calling, the death of New York, the Empire State. And I was sitting there, I could feel the wind blowing. It was a very strong wind, just blowing from my right to my left. And the way I was sitting, which was facing New York, Manhattan, across the Hudson River, It was from south to north. It was coming from the south upwards, shall we say. But it was, the weird thing is, it was parallel to the river, parallel to Manhattan, to the Manhattan's coastline, shall we say, the Manhattan Island coastline. So it was parallel to the river, going from south to north. It was just kept blowing, and it was intense. I don't know how to explain it. There was an intensity to it, just constantly blowing, and I could feel, I don't know how to explain it, but I was sitting there feeling that wind, and the wind came with an emotion, and the emotion was anger and disappointment. That's what I could feel with the wind. It wasn't just wind blowing. It was, I could feel someone, just like as if someone was blowing this wind of anger and disappointment. And it was blowing across me from south to north. And I could, it's as if the truth was saying, I'm angry and disappointed with you. It felt like a father, a loving father who had, tried everything to help his kid, to have, his kid set his life straight, and done everything possible, made all the resources available, and the kid just didn't respond, and the father being angry and disappointed at the kid and saying, I'm not going to help you anymore. You are no longer my son. You're nothing to me anymore. And I think that's what the truth has said to America. The truth just kept disappointing. America just kept disappointing the truth. And it got to the point where the truth just had to say, no more. I don't want anything to do with you anymore. And that's what the truth has just said to America. I don't want anything to do with you anymore. That's what I felt when the wind was blowing, and the name Lee kind of intrigues me. I looked it up, and it means clearing in the woods. It comes from an old word that means clearing in the woods. It can be translated as clearing or meadow, and it made me think of when the pilgrims came to America. And America was mostly undeveloped because the Amerindians had been here, and contrary to the white trash liberal belief, they were not a thriving civilization, that had developed this land, and everything was just jungle. Well, not jungle, but you know what I mean. Undeveloped vegetation, just a place waiting for someone to make use of it. And the pilgrims came, and in a sense, they kind of cleared a bit of the woods and set up a foothold in the land. And that's how America started. They did the same thing in Virginia with Jamestown and stuff. And that's what came to my mind when I saw that clearing in the woods, somebody coming and starting something new, clearing the woods, clearing the wood. It represents temporality in many ways. Clearing the woods, clearing the temporal to start something permanent and new. And that's what we were here to do in America. That's what we came to do, a clearing in the woods to start, to end what was temporal and start something eternal and new. But we kind of failed to do that. And instead, we kind of perverted the name Lee. And because every time I kept thinking of Hurricane Lee, I kept thinking of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general who fought so hard to preserve slavery in the South. And yes, he didn't do it because of that, but that's what he did for all intents and purposes. Pardon my French, I don't give a damn whether or not he was overtly racist or pro-slavery. He fought for the South, hence he was fighting for slavery, full stop, end of story. He was a traitor, a worthless traitor, a bastard, and it's disgusting how conservatives often see him as some sort of like tragic hero figure when he is clearly a man who stood for and fought for evil. So it's, he kind of represents how we took the good Lee, the good thing about Lee, and he turned it into something bad. And it's not a coincidence that his name is Robert. As we've said before, there's something about that name, at least in the context of America. I don't know why. There's something about the name that's not right. And I found out by coincidence the other day that turns out that Hunter Biden's first name is actually Robert. His name is not first name is not Hunter. It's Robert. And for some reason, I've always connected Robert in the American context with a predator spirit, like someone who's like a wolf going out to go hunt down and kill someone to take advantage of them. So it's interesting that that son of a bitch, literally, he is the son of a bitch named Jill. His name is Robert Hunter, bite me. So, he's like a predator hunting down and taking advantage. And that's what we have turned Lee into. Went from being a clearing in the woods, a place of refuge, a safe haven, a meadow where we can start building something new, to it turned into this place where the truth seekers were hunted down. If you ever want to think about a little more about on that, if you're interested, there's a posting on the website where these recordings are posted, called something about a meadow house, a giant house in the meadow, or something to that effect. Yes, giant house on the meadow. And we talk about meadows there, which is interesting. But the thing is that Lee has been churning and churning and churning during these days that when America went brain dead, and it's not a coincidence. It's like a sign, a representation of America. And I'm going to go very quickly through four things, because time is really running out, and I've gone way too long. But let me just very quickly read an article, or read parts of an article that came out on September the 5th. This was one day before America's brain death went into effect, came in. It's on the dailymail.com, and it says, "Huge fire sparks panic as it streaks across the skies above D.C. and New York City at 36,000 miles per hour and causes loud boom as it explodes." It says, "A meteor or rock from space streaked across the sky on Sunday evening. The fireball was spotted as south as Richmond, Virginia, and as north as New York." And it says, "Reports began pouring in at 9:30 p.m. on Sunday when the blast was first spotted. The fireball was seen in Richmond and New York." So, and there's a picture of it. There's this flash of light going across the sky. And without going into too many more details, I know these are the signs of confirmation about the death of the country. And that fireball, you know, going through the sky is America going down in flames. That's what that represents. And the other thing I wanted to share was there was a story that came out of a guy who started beating up the 60-year-old woman. It says, from the dailymail.com again, this was posted on September the 6th, the story, but I think it happened maybe the day before or a couple of days earlier. It says, "Thug who beat 60-year-old woman with her own cane 50 times on New York City subway goes on deranged rant as he's perp walked by cops following arrest. Norton Blake, 43, bared his teeth as he was perp-walked on Wednesday. He was arrested 5 days after allegedly beating Laurel Reynolds, 60. Police sparked fury after initially letting him walk following the vicious assault." Because, you know, in America is like catch and release. You know, that's how New York City treats criminals. The thing is that Thug was, this guy was beating up this 60-year-old woman, and there's a video of it. It's so sad. It's happened at 3 a.m. in the morning inside some new subway station in New York, and there was this guy filming it. And it's the irony, you know, the question that's always asked about people who film these incidents, that they film it, but they don't step in to do anything. Apparently, this guy came and tried to hit the 60-year-old black woman. And I think he's half black, half white. I'm not quite sure, because sometimes he looks white, but in other angles, he looks black. So he might be a mixed race person. But it's a tall fellow. He suddenly apparently came up to the woman and who knows why he started trying to hit her with an umbrella. So she started defending herself. She had a cane, and she put up the cane to defend herself from the umbrella. And somehow the guy was able to get hold of her cane and started beating her with her own cane. And I know there's more message to this, too much for me to process in one moment. But the weird thing is that this fellow, when he was arrested, started saying all these very strange things. He said, "It's like Donald Trump says, it's fake news, it's going to be one-sided. You're going to take like AI and make it seem like my words to use against me." And then it says here, moments before he ducked into a police car, Blake added, "Use the spirit of the Lord. Judgment is coming on the face of the earth. World War III is upon us. Judgment is coming upon the face of the earth," he repeated, which is very, very peculiar. And, you know, I don't know why he attacked the woman. And, you know, and a black woman. And apparently this black woman is Christian, from a comment I read from her. I think she was praying for him to get caught or something. So she is either a Christian or someone who, you know, at least believes in God or something. But he wasn't hitting her that hard. I mean, he was hitting her, but not really, you know, as hard as he could have been hitting her. But he was hitting her with the cane. I'm looking at the part of the video right now. And apparently she's okay. So she could have, he could have killed her. But I don't know why he was just beating her. And it just made me think of, you know, Black America that had a calling to be a watchman on the watchtower, and they were not watching, and America died. And it's as if this guy's coming to represent that. Why were you not watching? Why were you not watching? The judgment has come. I don't know why. I mean, I know that he seems like a crazy person, but in all this craziness, there is a message there. And the weird thing, all the things he started saying, and this happened 5 days, you know, before September the 6th, and then he was arrested, and the story comes out of him arrested on September the 6th, the beginning of the brain death of America, and him, you know, shouting these very peculiar things as if there was something inside of him that got stirred, that the judgment is coming, and it's as if he was angry that, you know, we had not responded, and started beating one of the people responsible for the death of the country. I'm speaking figuratively. I hope I'm making sense. And I know this is the tirade of what seems to be like a deranged person attacking an apparently, you know, innocent victim. But I don't know. There's something there. I know it's like symbolic of the death of the country in some way. And then I know I have to finish very quickly, but there was another story that came out, again, on the Daily Mail. This was September the 8th, but this was about something that happened on September the 7th, the second day of the brain death. It says, "Trump or death banners unfurled at Yankee Stadium, the second banner of the runaway Republican candidate this week. It is the second time in a week a Trump flag has been unveiled at Yankee Stadium. The Trump or death flag was unfurled ahead of New York Yankees win versus Detroit on Wednesday." And then I saw a clip of it, and this flag is unfurled as "God Bless America" is being sung. And there was this flag that was unfurled, I'm looking at it right now. It says "Trump or death," and with the image of Trump in the middle, with a, in a in a circle, and then to either on either side of Trump, there are two years. 1 year is 1776, and the other year is 2024. It's basically saying, and it's interesting, this happened on the second day of the death of the brain death of America, and it's as if to say America was saying, we are going to go down this highway where we believe that we can rescue the country in 2024 with Trump, and we're willing to die if that's not the case. And the truth said, okay, you're dead. You see the irony there? And then 1776 is, again, that thing, going back to the foundation of the founding fathers in the U.S. Constitution, saying, we're going to stick with this, we don't care how, and it's Trump or death. And it's just that the truth said, okay, death. You chose death. You just told me you want death. Death you shall have, and death you have been given. And I know that is fitting. As a side note, I find it interesting that it was the God Bless America was being played as that flag was unfurled, and it's also amazing as a side note that they sing God Bless America at the start of a baseball game, and I don't know if this is a normal thing across the country, but I know that this happens a lot in New York, and it just tells you something different about New York that. If New York's potential had been fulfilled, there was something different about New York, where they're willing to sing God Bless America, not be, get all white liberal fascist on it about it. But in this case, it is sad. I kind of admire the bravery of the people unfurling a flag to a certain extent, but then I also feel shame for their recalcitrance. Their stubbornness in saying they didn't get it, and in that flag they basically announced their own death. That's how conservatives are. We have put our hope in Trump for 2024. He's going to get us out of this, and we're willing to die if that's not the case. And the truth said, okay, then you're dead. The last story I wanted to share with is. Again, from the Daily Mail, this was posted on September the 8th, 2023. It says, New York City is hit by sudden storm that's canceled over 200 flights across New York and New Jersey as locals share concerns over creepy clouds. And forecasters warn East Coast could soon be hit by Category 5, 165-mile-per-hour Hurricane Lee. So the reason why I wanted to share this is maybe I feel like they're exaggerating because it's not quite like that, and the forecasts are saying that Lee is not going to hit the coast directly. It's going to kind of go along it, but it may kind of affect New England later on. And I also feel like this protection, because I was hearing that there was going to be this big, massive rain that was just going to come on September the 8th and all that, and it really didn't pan out after the that strong wind that I was telling you about. Then a little bit of rain came, like a shower, but then it came and went. It's as if the truth was having mercy on me because I was outside, and then eventually it kind of cleared up a little bit. It was still cloudy, and the clouds were weird, and that's why I find it interesting that a lot of people were saying there were creepy clouds. That it was like a looming that because on September the 8th, New York State died, as we were sharing earlier, and it's like this sign of confirmation of these creepy clouds and this wind and the storm, and apparently there was hail in several parts of New England, so there's stuff going on. It's just that I'm not seeing it, but I feel like I'm in this bubble of protection, thankfully, because the truth has mercy on me. There's this Idalia is sitting off the coast of Canada. Off of Newfoundland or someplace there, and it seems to be acting like a buffer to hold off the coming of Lee towards the coast, especially New York. It's creating this buffer of protection. I was hearing the explanation on the Fox Weather Channel earlier, and I said, oh, thank you, thank you, that there's this thing protecting, because I'm here, I'm still here. I wish I could leave, but I'm still here. So there's this protection, but I just wanted to point out this thing. And there have been down power lines in some places in New Jersey, and I'm just not seeing it. But I'm sharing this as a sign of you know, that this death is not just me saying it. It is happening, and there's these signs and confirmations of it. And most people are not aware of it, and I'm just seeing some down power lines in Boxborough, Massachusetts, and chaos in some other place in Massachusetts as well. And I heard of and a lot of canceled flights because everybody got scared, because it's like everybody knew there's something in the air, there's a death in the air. Everybody became aware of it. And as mentioned here, it was a 200 flights canceled across New York and New Jersey. And it says New York City is hit by a sudden storm. So some storm must have hit. I just don't know. I didn't see it because I'm in this thankful bubble of protection. But it's just like a sign of confirmation. Yes, New York died on September the 8th. And each colony is going to continue dying. I don't know which one is dying today. Maybe it's Maryland. I'm not sure. Baltimore is very strongly connected to Philadelphia and New York. Too long to explain why I'm saying that, but New York and Philadelphia and Baltimore are kind of like very intertwined. And so it would be fitting that Maryland would be the next one to die, because Baltimore is in the colony or state of Maryland. So we have gone way over the time, and so officially America is dead. It died from September the 6th through to September the 8th, and it will continue. Its remaining organs are going to continue dying off up until September the 18th, but now it's official. America is a third world country now. Thank you very much for listening.